You're listening to Her Majesty's Internet. We now bring you a special presentation by It's Not Rounders.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the It's Not Rounders podcast. Later on in this week's episode, we're going to be talking to Tom Thornhill and Andreas Fopp of the University of East Anglia Blue Sox. But first, we're going to talk about names. Now, my name, as many of you will know, is Stu Walton. But where do baseball teams get their names from? It's an important thing to consider when starting up a new team. As we've established in this series, there are a number of new teams playing baseball in the UK this year, and not least a team in Norwich who play their first league game tomorrow. They are impressively named the Iceni, but according to one of our interviewees later on, were close to being called the Norwich Partridges. Now, etymologically, animals are a pretty sensible place to start. In the majors, you have other birds in the form of the Orioles, the Blue Jays or the Cardinals. Then you've got the Diamondbacks, the Cubs, the Tigers and the Marlins. Tampa Bay were, of course, originally the Devil Rays before they decided to drop the devil bit and make it a little bit ambiguous by putting a big sunshine on their logo but keeping a ray on their sleeve. You could curate a pretty varied zoo if you add in the animal names favoured by minor league teams, including Fisher Cats, Mud Hens and Stone Crabs, whatever they are. I suppose the choice of an animal is to strike fear into opponents' hearts as they imagine the ferocity of a tiger, the power of a black bear, or the ceaseless yapping of a chihuahua. As we mentioned in the recent fashion episode, there are three teams in the top league who base their names on the colour of the socks they wore. The Cincinnati Reds were originally the Cincinnati Red Stockings in the late 19th century, before shortening it to their current moniker. Well, apart from a brief spell in the late 50s, where they changed it to the Red Legs so that people wouldn't think they were communists. I wish I was making that up. A large number of the remaining major league teams that we haven't mentioned there have names relevant to their location or history, such as the Rockies, the Nationals, or the Astros. Names often have a tie-in with merchandise, as could be seen by the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, proving it wasn't just their name that was a mouthful when they incorporated a bacon design on their caps and jerseys. The caps of the Columbia Fireflies glow in the dark, and the Las Vegas 51s have a pretty predictable image on their apparel. Picking an unusual name can attract attention too, as our very own Bolton Robots of Doom from the Northern League discovered when an article on MLB.com highlighted their name amongst many other unusual names in America, in Asia and Europe, giving them and British baseball a bit of publicity. Hopefully we can speak to someone from the Robots of Doom soon to find out the origin of that particular nickname. So whether it's an animal, history or quirkiness that inspires your name, it's probably the most important thing to decide when you're starting your baseball team. It's your identity, it's what goes on your apparel, on your merchandise, and it's what gets you talking to other people. Now, we love talking to clubs about how they picked their team names, so get in touch with your origin stories and we'll get you on the show to explain it. And if you are listening and thinking of starting a new team and can't decide on what to call yourselves, take solace in the fact that it will never be as bad as the Memphis Fever Germs.
In the League of Ireland, the A-League, today the Dublin Black Sox play the Dublin Spartans, and then tomorrow
the Dublin Hurricanes play the Greystones Mariners. And in the B League, today there's a doubleheader between the Ashbourne Giants and the Belfast North Stars, while the Cavan Comets play the Ulster Buccaneers. And then tomorrow in the B League, the Dublin Hurricanes play the Greystones Mariners. For more information, go to baseballireland.com. In the League of Scotland, playing tomorrow, in a doubleheader, the Granite City Oilers are at the Glasgow Comets, and in a single header, the Edinburgh Cannons are at the Edinburgh Diamond Devils. For more information, go to baseballscotland.com. And in the British Baseball Federation, all of these games being played tomorrow. In the National League, there are three doubleheaders. The London Capitals are at the Southampton Mustangs, the Brighton Jets are at the Essex Arrows, and the Hearts Falcons are at the London Mets. The AAA season starts tomorrow, and all of these games are being played at Roundshaw Park. The Essex Redbacks will play the Richmond Knights, the Taunton Tigers will play the Oxford Kings, and then the Knights will play the Tigers before the Kings play the Redbacks. In the AA, the AA Central season starts next week, so all of these games from the AA South. The Tunbridge Wildcats are at the Brighton Redhawks, the Dawsill Spitfires are at the East London Latin Boys, the London Marauders are at the Brentwood Stags, the Hearts Hawks are at the Richmond Dragons, and the Southampton Mustangs are at the Guildford Mavericks. And finally, in the Single A, again, the Single A Central season starts next week, so all of these games are from the Single A South. The Tunbridge Bobcats are at the Cambridge Monarchs, the Kent Mariners are at the Norwich Iceni, the Bracknell Inferno are at the Hearts Raptors, the Cambridge Royals are at the Romford Wasps, and the Old Timers are at the Richmond Dukes. For more information, go to britishbaseball.org. Go and watch some baseball.
We'll be back for the bottom half of this week's episode, an interview with Tom Thornhill and Andreas Fopp of the University of East Anglia Blue Sox, after a message from one of our sponsors. Whenever I kick it with my homies, they know to expect the freshest tracks on my stereo. That's because I shop at Crawshaw's Hip Operations. For the sickest beats, dynamite MCs and super rocking DJs doing it in the mix, it has to be Crawshaw's. Crawshaw's Hip Operations. It'll knock your socks off.
I'm Richard Evans. I'm from Bristol Baseball Club, and I listen to this podcast. It's just fantastic.
You join us for the bottom half of this week's episode, and I'm delighted to be joined by two guests today from the UEA Blue Sox. That's Tom Thornhill and Andreas Fopp. Guys, great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you.
No worries. Okay, so we're going to talk university baseball. End of last series, we had Luke Stott on, who talked in great detail about how university baseball had been set up and the role that he has played in that. And so tell us a little bit about the origin of the UEA Blue Sox, please.
Basically, as we understand it, we thank Matt Smith for the article that he only released today, which outlines that before our knowledge, there was a university baseball team in the 1980s called the UEA Anglians.
Okay.
And which I think we're not actually sure how that came about. And it's probably the oldest baseball university baseball club in the country. And from that spawned a local Norwich team in the early 90s. And from that, the university baseball team was able to evolve. And as we understand it, in early 2006, the university team was reformed as the UEA Black Sox. And then that's established over time and changed to the Blue Sox. It's one of the oldest university baseball clubs and has been forever evolving. And lots of it has been, unfortunately, lost to history.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. So, I mean, I had no idea that, you know, university baseball had been going so long, really. And as you say, it's one of the oldest clubs. How long have you guys been involved?
Me personally, this I'm going into my third year, well, my final year, currently finishing that off. Hopefully, I'll be here for one more year because it's been such a pleasure to be part of the Blue Sox, and hopefully, I'll be more sort of in an advisory and player capacity, although I've spent my last two seasons as the assistant coach and vice president of the Blue Sox. So taking the administrative side together with the playing side.
And what about you, Tom?
I came across 2 years ago. I was already at the university and I fancied a difference. And that's kind of the beauty of university. You have so many different options available to you. And I came from cricket and I could utilize these skills I thought and it'd be good fun to try something out. I'd love softball at school. And I originally started as a softball player and slowly got integrated into the baseball setup. And that has been what I've been doing the last couple of years.
That's cool. And so do you get a lot of players in that mold who obviously have maybe even playing university cricket and then have gone over or?
Yeah, we only usually have, we naturally get quite a lot of athletic people, but it is a complete mix. We all get people that are interested in baseball that want to give it a go. And then you have other people that just want to try something completely new because it's university baseball. And then you get people that either played before and you basically get a whole range of people.
And that's precisely what Tom was saying right there with regards to the huge mixture that we receive. A lot of people, we have to sort of appeal to their previous interests. For example, you know, not to be too ironic here with regards to your podcast, but we mentioned the fact, okay, have you ever played rounders before? You played cricket. And that's precisely where, you know, someone like Tom comes in and we know that he has absolutely fantastic hand-eye coordination and he picks up the game as if, you know, he's played it for several more years than he actually has. And, you know, you don't have to be an athlete in this sort of context. But, you know, the athletes do tend to excel. And that being said, you know, us Blue Sox, we do accept pretty much everyone that comes our way.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, that's the beauty of university, and university as a way to get people playing baseball is people will go and they'll just try something different, won't they? Because it's there, it's an opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. And how we'd appeal to our player base would be like different to a BBF club. So, I mean, we have students that actually do work, like university work in amongst their university activities. And they're looking for something a lot more social, looking for something more full-time apart from the sport. So how we appeal to them is we have to run a club that runs a lot of socials. Like every fortnight we try and have a social. It's quite an interesting culture compared to BBF clubs in some ways.
Yeah, no, I can see that completely. Andreas, I'm guessing you do a lot of the coaching. Are there other qualified coaches around as well?
Well, I mean, given that I'm the assistant coach, I've been lucky enough to be part of the Blue Sox and under Ethan Atwood's captainship, who's been arguably one of our most longest standing members. He's been incredibly determined with making sure that every new recruit that we get is able to excel and develop properly. That being said, there are other local individuals, such as a couple people that will occasionally drop by from the local Norwich Iceni. They particularly like to help out, and we encourage them to do so whenever possible.
It's amazing how kind of lucky you get. I played for a local cricket club, and at that local cricket club was a player who played GB youth level, and this is a cricket club in Norfolk.
Yeah.
And because of that, he joined the local Iceni club, and he said because of me and the Blue Sox, he's had a great connection with us, and he's been able to umpire games. And having someone local that can umpire games independently, especially in Norfolk, it's been invaluable to us this season. And to have that extra experience, it's been invaluable to the Iceni and to the Blue Sox, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine
Whenever he's come to any of our training sessions, people immediately look up to him because he is such a wealth of knowledge. He's been he spent many years getting involved within the game, primarily throughout his youth, and obviously he has this connection, this very strong connection to the game of baseball, and it's very clear that whenever he's dropped by, he's more than happy to help some of our more inexperienced players figure out, you know, this is how you play the game properly, and these are the fundamentals.
And he helps solve the challenge that university baseball has, where every 3 years everyone will leave and you'll have a completely fresh set of players. And you have to basically, on 2 or 3 years' knowledge, teach a completely new, fresh set of people. And odds are you won't have any coaching qualifications. So having someone that has 10 years of experience instead of two is just, yeah, it's really invaluable.
Yeah, no, completely. So tell us a little bit more about university baseball as it is for the Blue Sox. I imagine quite a lot of traveling.
Oh, very much so. We've been lucky enough this past year to be involved in the inaugural season, the National University Baseball League, the NUBL as we call it.
Right, yeah.
And absolutely fantastic experience. I, you know, obviously with any inaugural season and with any initial run at these sorts of large-scale operations, you're going to have difficulties. And while there were a couple of bumps in the road, as you know, the people that set it up in the first place, primarily Luke Stott, will admit, the schedule, you know, ran relatively smoothly on the whole, and we were able to play pretty much every single fixture, with the exception of one that involved Coventry coming down. However, we do hope to play them next year.
Well, the league is just, before last season, we'd only have probably a couple self-managed fixtures, which would be friendlies that we'd have to travel very far for, and the National University Baseball Championships. And we'd be looking at 4 or 5 fixtures a year. And because of the league this year, and I'd like to say thank you to Luke for organising that, because it means our fixture list goes up by 200%,
wow,
which is what people want to do. And it's something that has to be done self-managed, because we can't get into Bucks. You have to have about 50 different universities all with playing baseball regularly and set up in order to enter Bucks.
Yeah.
And just the way the nature of our club is, it would be probably incredibly hard to join Bucks with the nature of baseball, how long the games last, how long we'd have to travel. And having that league just is really, it has changed the club's culture. It's changed people wanting to play competitive baseball instead of just playing baseball.
How has this season been for the Blue Sox?
Well, on the whole, started off relatively slowly, because obviously with regards to turnover, you need to make sure that the new wave of recruits is obviously welcome, and that you teach them the fundamentals. We tried to get them up and running and involved with the fall edition of the National University Baseball Championships.
Yep.
Obviously, the difference here being, you know, you have one in the fall, you have one in the spring. And we improved from, what was it? It was 6 out of 8 teams in the fall to a fourth place finish out of 15 total teams in the spring edition.
I mean, that's sort of indication of how much university baseball has grown. And I think that is because of the league. People are playing regular fixtures and they know to turn up.
Yeah.
Because they are playing fixtures, and there's that massive growth. And I think that's also reflected in softball. Softball tournaments grown as well. And I mean, for us, playing competitive baseball in these league fixtures, we've developed a kind of team mentality more than we normally would in previous seasons. We went into that championship tournament knowing what people's roles were, what team we were going to play, and how we wanted to progress through the tournament.
Mm.
And I think the league, if it can continue in its current capacity, you'll see the benefits in 5 years' time to university baseball. It will be, well, in your face, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just what Tom was mentioning, fixtures, and more fixtures. We have really, I think the benefit this year in comparison to previous years, particularly for me, was you don't have this huge lull between the October National University Baseball Championships and then the spring version, you know, because typically during that time period, especially in my first and second year, there was this dearth of fixtures. There was nothing really to be had. You had to set up all the friendlies yourselves, and you had to do most of the networking that was reliant on basically you getting in contact and maintaining good relations with other universities. Here, the fixtures are provided. Obviously, you still need to get in touch with the other universities, and you know, we'll probably mention a little bit more about networking later. But you know, the important bit here is, you know, there's a framework in place, and it's looking like university baseball really is a bright future heading from now on out.
That's great. I mean, Tom, you mentioned there about obviously the inevitable turnover that you're going to have with people, you know, having 3-year courses or whatever their situation may be. So what happens when you finish uni? Like, well, is that baseball for you, or are you going to be playing league baseball, or what happens?
I think, well, if you're any other individual, it completely depends on your level of interest in the sport. But for me personally, I will hopefully move to wherever there is a baseball club and hopefully carry on playing because of my experience at university.
Mm.
It's a great kind of segue into that club kind of environment and that competitive scene that is the BBF leagues.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Tom will eventually gravitate and find himself in another sort of baseball culture, because for me in particular, and I can speak for most likely many other members that have graduated both in the past and potentially this year from UEA, you know, there's this sort of feeling of belonging, and you want to continue playing the game to whatever capacity you can. And obviously the BBF caters to that sort of craving, if you like. And luckily enough, Norwich now have its own team, and I'm sure that while we're going to be playing at least for the next few months or so before we do graduate, there will be other teams that we'll be on the lookout for.
And that's the really great thing about the Blue Sox. It spawned the iSenior. It was formed from ex-UEA Blue Sox players that wanted to keep playing after their university career, and lots of them lived locally, and it was like, hey, there's 5 or 6 of us here, let's get a team. And throughout the last couple of years, we've been able to join and tag on to that practice throughout the summer, and the club has grown to the stage where it can enter the single A league for the first time. I mean, our first game is this Sunday.
Yeah.
And to see that progression, it's a continuation of 3 or 4 generations of Blue Sox players that have come together to form a club. So it is effectively UEA Blue Sox All-Stars coming together over the previous years.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. So, I mean, both of you are quite involved, obviously, at an administrative level within the club. What advice would you give listeners who perhaps are at uni and they're at a university that don't have a baseball team yet? How would they go about starting up one?
I would say either get in touch with someone at BSUK or with Luke. They have great experience and great experience of helping people set up the clubs. They will more likely be able to help you out. Or at the end of the day, it is just people starting a club and then escalating from there. Just make sure you, whatever happens, just practice and just run the club as it normally should be. I mean, starting up a baseball club for the right reasons. I think the Southampton Mustangs in BUB did a profile on them the other week, and they started up a baseball club because they wanted a baseball jacket, and they couldn't get one in 97 because there was no online shopping. And then they started to evolve, and they really enjoyed it, and they stuck with it. And I think a lot of the funding comes from university unions. It's getting in touch with your union and making sure you have a core number of people dedicated and interested in playing baseball constantly. That is the way that your club will thrive, because I mean, with any club, actually.
Absolutely. I'd have to agree with Tom on pretty much every single point there. I mean, the important thing here is making sure that you have a good foundation, because without that, you know, if you have the support, both in terms of members, because you have to take into account that turnover can wreak havoc on clubs occasionally, and you will see an ebb and flow in terms of your recruitment, but you need to make sure that you're able to weather that, that you can continually appeal to members, people that are potentially unsure about joining, you know, a lot of it is getting your name out there, making yourself known within the university. And I think that's what's been a huge point in our favor this year, in that we've had a larger social media presence. And that's been sort of something that we've worked on a lot this year.
And the other thing is longevity. I mean, each club, what we call it a purge, is where the majority of your foundation core just graduate. And we were left in the situation 2 years ago where we had five members, and that was it that carried over.
Yeah.
And I mean, one of them was Andreas here, and luckily we had that baseball experience stay, but we've built it back up to having around 40 members now. And yeah, it's your ability to kind of keep player recruitment up and keep player interested there. And by having that fresh phase each time, because every club will go through cycles like that. I mean, we're not all Loughborough, where you're always going to have a real availability of arms everywhere. I mean, there are clubs that Southampton recently went through a phase of really kind of all of their key players leaving, and you do take a few downturns. And it's probably more realistic to MLB clubs than actually the BBF leagues are. So it's quite interesting to watch. That person's graduated, they're going to struggle to try and replace him.
Yeah.
And it can be quite interesting like that, because when you have that community mentality, you're aware of, oh, Nottingham have got that guy, what's he doing this year? It does make university baseball, there is a definite contrast between university baseball and BBF in that way.
Yeah.
I guess you can also get involved with, like, as a wider uni thing as well. You can convince these people who are graduating, come and do a master's here, and have a season playing for the Blue Sox.
Yeah, it'll be very much like an American university, wouldn't it?
Yeah, funnily enough, we do get our fair share of Americans over here, at least we have in the past. And we were lucky enough to have...
We, at the beginning of the semester, we had an exchange student from Louisiana. He claimed he could pitch an 85-mile-an-hour fastball.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, that got everyone's attention, as you can imagine.
Yeah, no, of course.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting having that. Obviously, we have a readier supply of international students, and that is a really great fabric for teams and makes university baseball really interesting.
Yeah, no, I have to agree. And I mean, when I came over here, my initial thought was, all right, what's the diversity within the club like? And I was actually kind of surprised in that, you know, we have a reasonable number of international students, but I feel like it's largely a pool that we have yet to fully tap into. Mm. And we've been attempting to do that for the last two seasons. It'll be interesting to see how the Blue Sox, new Blue Sox committee that is going to be elected relatively soon, go about doing that next year. But hopefully we'll be able to sort of bring in more and more diverse characters and personalities from throughout the university, because that's always been a goal of ours, is to really show that we are an international community here at UEA.
That's great. So you mentioned there as well about being very active on social media. How can our listeners follow your exploits?
We have unfortunately, unlike the BBF, we don't have a home hub as of yet, but lots of the university clubs either are established quite well through BUB, and on BUB you can find usually all the clubs' university baseball pages, and ours is our Facebook page, on which we post our game reports, our results, what we're up to all the time. If not, our hashtag is @UEASox. That is also Twitter. And those are our main foundations for appealing to the outside community, essentially.
That's great. There's a lot of content on Instagram as well, isn't there?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about this kind of social media presence. It's, we always think of what are our aims and what do we want to achieve this year? And it's always, we want to continue the club and keep people committed. And in contrast to what we do with the Iceni group and what content they kind of pump out, we always find our members are a lot, no offense to the Iceni guys, but a lot younger and a lot more active on social media. So doing things like Instagram, it's not just about appealing to other, you know, other clubs, and it's cool to interact with them. It actually is a sense, it's actually a really useful branding tool for us to keep players engaged and keep seeing our brand and being like, actually, I'm going to turn up to practice today because of that.
Yeah.
And it's quite, it's, I mean, if we were to use the Iceni example, I mean, I think only about 5 of the active roster on Instagram, whereas I think about 95% of the Blue Sox roster are on Instagram.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just, it's just, it's just appealing to what your consumers are.
No, totally. Totally agree. Tom, Andreas, it's been fascinating listening to you. And we look forward to monitoring the way that University Baseball grows. Try and get the University Baseball fixtures on the podcast as well in future. Thanks very much. Have a great season. And enjoy your league play with the Iceni.
Yeah, thank you very much.
No, thank you, Steve. Thank you very much.
That's the final out for another episode of the It's Not Rounders podcast. Big thanks to Tom and Andreas of the UEA Blue Sox for their time earlier this week. Thanks to Andrew Morley, of course, for writing our theme music, and to Ben Sound for providing supplementary music used in the episode. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find us on Facebook or on Twitter using the name Not Rounders, or you can send us an email to notrounders@gmail.com. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes as well. Thanks for swinging by. We'll be back next week.